Hi, this is Kim Catola. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Cradle My Heart Radio. You can hear the show live on Sundays at 9 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock Central, and there are many more podcasts for this and all of our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thank you for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
This is Cradle My Heart Radio with your host, Kim Catola. Cradle My Heart Radio, preventing abortion and helping those it hurts.
This is where the healing begins. Oh, this is where the healing starts. When you come to where you're broken within, the light meets the dark. The light meets the dark.
And now, Kim Catola and Cradle My Heart Radio.
Well, hello and welcome to Cradle My Heart Radio. This time out, we are going to be talking about something that I think is really important as we embark on a healing journey, and that's this idea of brokenness and what happens to it, and what is God's plan in our brokenness. You know, our purpose here at Cradle My Heart Radio is to prevent abortion and to help those it hurts. But as we do that, so many other life issues come into play. And so this idea of healing is going to be what we'll focus on today. And our guest to talk about this is Cynthia Rukti, a prolific author, a fellow broadcaster. And she's going to talk today about a new book, Cynthia, Tattered and Mended. Welcome to Cradle My Heart Radio.
Thank you so much, Kim. I'm so pleased to be able to talk about this with you today.
So tell me, who are you writing for with this one, with Tattered and Mended, your latest?
The complete title is Tattered and Mended, The Art of Healing the Wounded Soul. And so all of us can relate in some way, either because of something we're going through ourselves, maybe a long-term grief that we've been going through that has frayed the edges of our soul or has really made us feel kind of shattered and broken in depths of places we never realized. Or we know someone who is, someone within our family or our extended family, within our church family, neighborhood, community. It relates in many very key ways to your particular focus on this program too, because no matter what stage of all of this, no matter where we've been, whether a grandparent who has been through an experience like that or part of the church family, all of us know someone or are a person who has been through a time of having that the threads of our soul weakened. So that's who this book is for.
And I love the inspiration for this. You say that when you sat down to write Tattered and Mended, a premise just filled your heart. And it's one of those things that it's one of those wonderful moments in life where it almost wrote itself. Tell me about the premise for this.
It was so interesting the way it happened. All of us who write books or blog posts and things like that, we all have an inspiration from someplace. Sometimes it's a word or an object that we see. In this particular case, I in my spirit, I was feeling these words come out that formed this phrase, almost like a poem that said, "People are tattered, and the world says, then let's make tattered fashionable." And we've seen that happen in our world today. But God invites us to mend. And the premise came up from that idea of looking at how interesting it is, almost in a The Emperor's New Clothes sort of way, that we saw that there was some point in time when the world decided, somebody in the fashion industry decided that threadbare jeans were going to cost more money than whole fabric, that
right.
We're going to find ways that we could bleach to death and shred to death and take scissors and knives and razor blades to our the knees of our jeans or the thighs of our jeans and other fashion items and make them as threadbare as we possibly could and then slap a real high price tag on that. And it's almost as if in our emotions and in our relationships and in deep in our soul that has happened too, that the world kind of decided, if we're all broken in various ways, so let's just make that fashionable. But there's a call to the heart that goes beyond that, and it says you don't have to remain that way. There is a place of healing, and it is found in God's invitation for us to mend.
That is such an astute observation, Cynthia, because not only, I think, does the fashion world try to celebrate the tattered, but what I see happening, and this really fascinated me recently, a friend who's African-American said, before the deep conversations were happening about the Confederate flag recently, said, well, what needs to happen is black people need to appropriate it and put it on our clothing and put it on our cars and put it on our, you know, bumper stickers, because we'll drain off all the power of it. And I think sometimes when we try to make our tatters fashionable, that's sometimes what we're trying to do. We try to say, we try to become shameless instead of succumbing to shame, rather than, you know, actually being healed, which makes us shame-free. And I think that that dynamic is something that I see so much in people who want to be healed, but they're afraid it's going to hurt too much to heal, that it'll be healing, heaping more pain onto what's already a very tender place. Do you identify anything like that going on?
I see that absolutely true, Kim, and I really appreciate the way you describe the difference between shameless and shame-free, and that there is so much truth to that. God doesn't just slap a Band-Aid on us and say, carry on, go on off and play. He is, and this is part of the key premise of the book, is that he is artful in the way that he mends. He's artful in the way that he heals. And it's not always comfortable. We know that to be true. It isn't always comfortable, but comfort isn't the goal. Healing is the goal. Mending is the goal. Coming to a place of wholeness is the goal. If we stop shy of that, if we say, well, I can never know that, I can never be at a place where that's true in my life, then we're missing out on something so vital and so key in being able to come to that place where we really, honestly, nothing provides as fascinating a read as the story of the wounded made whole. When we get to that place, we are not only in a stronger place ourselves, but we're providing a story for others to look at and for others to draw hope from, so that they too can come to that same place of realizing God issues this divine invitation for us to mend, to be strong, to be firm, to have those frayed places darned in a way, or mended. In I've used some examples in the book of some beautiful tapestry methods that were used from ancient history in, especially in Japan, in Asian cultures, where they would take fabric, indigo fabric that had practically become rags, and they would put tiny little stitches in a line, and many, many lines worth of that to strengthen that fabric. Well, it turns out that not only made that piece of clothing or that jacket or the whatever it was that they were repairing, not only made it stronger and made it useful again, but it became a piece of art that now hangs in museums, and it has lasted for centuries because the methods that they used and the carefulness and the attention to detail that they used turned this into something that was not just useful but beautiful. God does that all the time with us, and I think sometimes we have to take a step back, almost like stepping away from a painting, so that we can see the whole effect of what it is that he does and how many layers it's affecting in our lives when we allow him to do that work within us.
And this is called sashiko. Is that the technique that you're talking about?
Right, exactly right. Sashiko and boro are two different methods of that ancient artful mending and stitchery work that has just become such a, to me, it's so representative of something not only beautiful, but also it makes that connection, too, that we do have to take a deep breath, because some of the mending work does sting, and there were these needles that had to be poked into that fabric and poked in again and again and again in order to strengthen that fabric to make it more useful. And oftentimes the mending work within us means that we have to be willing to have some of the pain revisited, or we have to be willing to do and participate in this mending process in a way that makes us kind of lay ourselves out there for the Lord to do whatever he needs to do to bring us to that place of healing.
Mm. Cynthia Rukti is our guest, and we're talking about her latest book, Tattered and Mended. So as you talk about this beautiful analogy of a mended garment, what I see is that, you know, sometimes our imagination limits us when we go before the Lord, taking everything that we have in our faith and saying, Lord, I can't undo what's been done. I'll never be the person that I was. I put myself in your hands, but we can't imagine what's going to come out on the other side of that. Never imagining the beautiful and creative ways that he has of actually making us into a new garment, if you will. And I think that this is important if somebody listening needs that but has not yet experienced that in any area of their lives, what God's healing really looks and sounds and feels like. Talk about how God heals.
This has been such a fascinating topic for me to delve into, as not only in writing this book, but as I look at the lives around me that have experienced that, either are experiencing it now or have in the past. One of the key elements of this is that, really, honestly, is that God teaches that mending a tattered soul is unrelated to the inability to change the past. The past will be the past. It is always there. He's in the business of making all things new, and we know that to be true. We've read it in God's word, but oftentimes we have a hard time applying that to see how that could possibly be true in our own lives. I take a look in the book at ancient and modern mending techniques and artful repair from a lot of different angles. One of the most fascinating to me was when they had to rip the copper roof off of an airport. It had no longer served its purpose. It was getting worn for that purpose of protecting the airport. And the copper roof came off in these sheets and tangled masses of metal, and it was fit for the dumpster. But instead of going to the dumpster, there were artists within the community who took pieces of that copper and turned pieces of that roof into art pieces, something totally different. They made lamps out of it. They made coffee tables from it. They made beautiful pieces of furniture, beautiful pieces of art that would hang on the wall. All of the artists that were involved in this wonderful community project turned out something different. In their hands, with their artistic bent, they found a way to create something very unique and beautiful and awe-inspiring from what had been this tangled mass of discarded metal. Now, God, in his methods, he does something far, far, far more creative than that. Creativity is at his very heart. And he loves to find ways of taking the broken, tattered, shattered, ragged pieces of what we used to be and make it something so beautiful that it winds up being a showpiece in many ways, not a showpiece of us, but a showpiece of what his talent and his creativity can do. That's such an incredible a hope giver for those of us who feel like what we have been or what we have been through or what we chose to do or what was done to us or against us has locked us into this place of brokenness. And in reality, God is just itching. He's just waiting to get his hands on us so that he can then turn us into this work of art that will give him glory and will also be a story that can be hope-giving to someone else.
Hmm. Cynthia Rukti is our guest. We're talking about her books, Tattered and Mended, The Art of Healing the Wounded Soul. And Cynthia, you're not just writing from theory and study here. You've had some times of being tattered and needing mending yourself. Please tell us about a time in your life when these things became real to you.
One of those times there, I could list any number of them, and I feel as if in many ways I have lived a very blessed life, where some of the pains and hurts and distresses that others have borne, I have not had to go through. But I have had enough in my life to know that this principle proves true. And I have watched the people around me, some who are very, very close to me, walk through these things and know that that principle does prove true. One of the times in my own life was back in the mid-80s when I began to have a list of symptoms that seemed to have no real root, and the medical community was stymied over what was wrong with me. It seemed like every few days or weeks, or certainly every month, when I went in for a new doctor's appointment, I had at least one more symptom, maybe two or three more, until eventually it was at the place where I had 13 different odd symptoms, from heart palpitations to muscle pain and joint pain and distress and migraines and visual problems. And it seemed an unending list of unrelated symptoms. Now that we've had some experience with this, in this day and age, a doctor would probably have gone more quickly to the idea that that could have been Lyme disease, which is what it was. But it was about a year and a half before the medical community at that time understood, could take a look at what was happening to me and had that idea. Perhaps it could be Lyme disease, which it was. It had taken such a hold of me. It had taken such a hold in me that it got to the place where I really was kind of flat out on the couch. If I sat up, then there would be this intense headache. I had young children. I had a radio ministry at the time. I was pressing on, but it was so, so difficult. And I felt like one by one, every one of my strengths, if you wanted to call it that, had been drained away. During that process of time, there were lessons that I learned that I never would have wanted to miss. One of the key ones was that when everything is stripped away, Jesus is still enough. I doubt that I would have understood that in the depths that I now do if it hadn't been for that period of time. There are still things now that sometimes come back to stir up a little and remind me of what I had been through during that time period, but I'm grateful beyond grateful that God found ways to use that time to prove to me what his heart was really like, what his ability in our weakness really looked like, and how he could help me to endure something that seemed like it was unendurable. There were periods of time during that we weren't sure I was going to live. This was mostly before we knew what it was that was happening. And then beyond that, and I don't want to drag this out here, but beyond that, I have watched some dear, dear friends go through some heart-wrenching problems, especially in recent days, in the last few years, and found that in the process of that, the circumstances that ordinarily would have just devastated, crushed, broken, made them to be reduced to nothing. Instead, they turned their thoughts and their heart toward God. They completely surrendered and abandoned their story to him, and we're watching him recreate this beautiful product out of what could have been ultimately just soul-destroying.
Well, and as you talk about this, I'm intrigued of what your research and your work on this book has led you to conclude about how the healing ministry that Jesus had, how those miracles performed while he was here on earth, apply to our need for healing today. Because it's one of the things that I've written about. It's one of the things I try to help people understand. How can we appropriate those miracles? What do they mean for us today in our need for healing?
I know you're as excited as I am about the idea that when we really take a careful look at how God healed in the Word, those stories that he told in the Word, and especially in regards to the healing ministry of Jesus, we find that he rarely healed the same way any two times. And certainly when we look at even just the subject of blindness, there were so many different ways that he healed the blind. But then I dug a little bit deeper, and I found that not only was he using different methods, to one he would speak a word, to another he would make mud, to another he would use his spittle, and there were so many different methods, but also who was affected by that. This is one of the things that really jumped off of the pages to me and got my mind thinking in a new way about how many people were affected by those healings. I think of the blind beggar, Bartimaeus, and I realized that the spectacular way that Jesus healed meant that his entire life was different from that moment on. He left everything behind. He really left a life of homelessness behind and followed Jesus. The community was affected by what had happened. When we look at the story of the father who had a son who had thrown himself into the fire, he had these self-destructive tendencies and the spirit within him that would make him cut himself and burn himself and wander off and throw him into fits and seizures all the time. It's such a beautiful, beautiful story, and the book of Mark is one of the places where that's told, where the community is arguing, the community is probably telling that dad, why can't you keep that boy quiet, or have you tried this, have you tried that, have you tried that? And Jesus steps onto the scene, and the father interacts with Jesus and said, if you can do anything, please help us. The thought that struck me was, the father didn't say, help him. He said, help us, because this father realized that healing the son was going to change everything in their family life. Their family dynamic would be changed. And Jesus indeed did heal the son, and all the father's prayers were answered. The father had also prayed, Jesus, I have a measure of faith. Help my lack of faith, or where my faith is frayed, please make it whole. I think that's a prayer that many of us pray or should pray and can pray and find even that prayer answered. The community had a change in their hearts watching this young man when he was made whole. The father got to sleep a solid night's rest for probably the first time since this young man was a child. This had been going on for years in their family. And the moment that Jesus intersected with their story, everything was changed. And from that moment on, this goes back to what you had said initially, too, about making all things new. They had never known normal family life. And when this beautiful healing came from Jesus, not only was the young man no longer self-destructive and suicidal, but also the rest of the family was changed. There, can you imagine that this family then was able to reach out and help other people? That this family no longer was consumed day in and day out with one eye always on that child, praying that they would be there if something happened to him, or if he set off in another one of these of the fits and the seizures, and if he tried again to injure himself. The freedom that father must have felt and the whole family must have felt is one of those artful ways that God mends.
You know, Cynthia, I think you probably have the makings of a community with this work, because the curating that you've done of images of the tattered fabric being made into something new through Sashiko on your Pinterest board and elsewhere, just so inspiring and beautiful to the eye. And we'll have that linked at cradlemyheart.org so you can go and visit those links and be healed just by the visual there. But we're almost out of time. I wanted to have you close by telling us about this phrase, hemmed in hope. What is the significance of that phrase for you?
There are so many forces in life that can try to unravel us. And it might be relationally, it could be emotionally, it definitely could be physically, and oftentimes spiritually too. So many forces that are at work to try to unravel us. And if we are hemmed in hope, that can't happen. So the tagline that I've adopted, hemmed in hope, everything I write, the nonfiction, fiction, devotions, everything I write can fall under that umbrella of communicating this principle of being hemmed in hope, so that when people exit one of my speaking events or when they finish one of the books that I've written, my prayer is that they would have a greater confidence to be able to say, I can't unravel. I'm hemmed in hope.
Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you so much for joining us today. The book we've been discussing is Tattered and Mended, The Art of Healing the Wounded Soul by Cynthia Rukti. And we've got all the information you need to get a copy for yourself at cradlemyheart.org. Cynthia, thank you for being our guest today.
Thank you so much. It's been a blessing.
Thanks so much for tuning in tonight. Now stay with us as we continue the live portion of our program as we take a look at the top news of the week on the life issue and welcome your phone calls, too. Phones are open now, 1-800-811-3003. Join us here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
With others, finding God's love after abortion. This is Cradle My Heart Radio.
This is where the healing begins. Oh, this is where the healing starts. When you come to where you're broken again, the light meets the dark. The light meets the dark.
Cradle My Heart. With Kim Cotola. Join the conversation. Call toll-free 800-811-3003. 800-811-3003.
Well, good evening, and thank you so much for making Cradle My Heart part of your weekend plans on this Sunday evening, the 19th of July. It's a pleasure to be joining you by the phone, and again, I do apologize for that. We brought our radio rig with us as we are on location in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, just outside of Tulsa. But we've had some technical glitches, and so it's back to the phones for us, and hopefully we can restore a little bit better quality signal to the broadcast next week. But we do want to be on the air regardless, especially on an important week like this in the news. You know, when this video of the medical director of Planned Parenthood of America surfaced this week, undercover video of her at a lunchtime meeting discussing what Planned Parenthood does with fetal remains. When this video surfaced early this week, many people got in touch with me right away to say, you know, what do you think, and why have you not commented? The video was released on the 15th, which I think was Wednesday of this week. And I think of such an interesting reaction from those of us who have been working in the pro-life world, working in post-abortion ministry for a long time. These were not the folks who immediately stepped out in response to this story and in reaction to it. And I think there are a number of reasons for that that we could talk about tonight. But I do want you to know that we were able to get an interview with Father Frank Pavone and get his thoughts about what this investigation has involved, as well as some of the historic reporting that Priests for Life, his organization, has done on the trafficking in fetal tissue for as many as 15 years, going back into some investigations that they had done through the years. And so we'll talk about it, but I think one of the things that I want to be sure that you know is that it's a stomach-churning topic. I think that those of us who work full-time in pro-life work, perhaps we're not as shocked as many others because our eyes have been opened to the fact that every day this is happening, and it's legal. You know, I don't know if you heard Jason Jones tell his story about when his sweetheart was coerced into an abortion by her father. He went off to join the Army to make a plan for them to start a family when they got pregnant as teenagers. And she called brokenhearted that the baby was gone. And he hung up the phone. He had joined the military, and he went and told his drill sergeant, I'm not sure exactly, but anyway, he went and told one of his superiors in the military, you know, called the FBI. They've killed my baby. And he said, wait a minute, Jason, this is legal. And, you know, I don't mean to say that I was jaded. I don't mean to say that anybody in pro-life ministry doesn't care about this story. But our eyes have already been opened to the fact that the bodies of aborted children are being disrespected in any number of ways. And disrespect doesn't begin to say it. So there was not a great deal of shock among those of us who already know the truth. Let's hear now from Father Frank Pavone with his comments about this story. And I should, in case you didn't see it, we've got some information on our website, on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/cradlemyheart. But the story is that undercover footage released this week showed that Planned Parenthood of America's Senior Director of Medical Services, Dr. Deborah Nucatella, described how Planned Parenthood sells the body parts of aborted children and admitting that she uses partial birth abortions to supply intact body parts. There's some question about whether or not this is legal. The White House weighed in, by the way, with the spokesman for President Obama, his top spokesman on Friday, defending Planned Parenthood, saying he hadn't seen the video. Josh Ernst also said that President Obama had not seen the video, but nonetheless, he defended Planned Parenthood as having the highest ethical guidelines. Let's see what you think about these comments from Father Frank Pavone.
Well, one of the relevant points is that they are breaking the law when it comes to this. Now, they're breaking the law in many ways, but this revelation of their selling baby body parts puts them in potential legal trouble on several fronts. So if they're engaged in illegal activity, they certainly shouldn't be receiving federal funds, and they're receiving a lot of those funds. 40% of their budget is made up of money from the government. Groups like us, we don't get a penny. So it's you know, like, what is, you know, why would we want tax money going to the largest abortion business? And you know, if we pause on that point for a moment, a lot of our fellow citizens still don't even realize that Planned Parenthood does abortions. And yet they are, in fact, the largest abortion business in the country and in the world. So they are, you know, responsible for hundreds of thousands of abortions every year in the United States. And now we see this additional horror that after the abortion is done, and I have had for the longest time, and it's on our website still, copies of the order forms that are used by research companies to get from these abortion clinics. For example, you can see an order form for a brain, whole brain. I have another order form here for two prenatal eyes. I have another one that says hip, thighs, and joint, and leg. Another one that says liver and heart and lung. I mean, they are ordering and cutting out of the bodies and then paying for and shipping on wet ice these body parts. It's just incredible that this is actually really happening.
That's Father Frank Pavone, who's the National Director of Priests for Life, and his organization cooperated with the investigation, as did Live Action, and David Daladin, who was the founder of the group that released the video, the Center for Medical Progress. As you may not be surprised, there is some brushback about who is this organization, the Center for Medical Progress, and there's been there was a video explanation, or a statement, I should say, released by CEO of Planned Parenthood, Cecile Richard, who apologized for the tone of the doctor. I know more than 2 million people have seen the video on YouTube, and it's chilling, very chilling indeed, as this doctor talks about what she's going to do for the people she believes to be her trading partners. And, you know, again, whether or not you believe this to be over the line ethically, over the line legally, it's very chilling to have her talk about harvesting fetal remains in the way that she does while she's eating lunch and drinking her red wine. And for that, Cecile Richards apologized for the tone, which, you know, on the one hand, Cecile Richards was absolutely unapologetic for what they're doing, but I think that it was very important that she went on record as apologizing for that tone, because some people, rather than look at what is really being presented here, immediately said the whole thing was a hoax. 1-800-811-3003 is our number, 800-811-3003. One of the things that we did ask Father Frank Pavone to do for us is to talk about what hope we have in the face of such gruesome news. You know, it's extremely difficult to take it in. And for the individual, Father Frank had some extremely comforting words. But I want you to know that if you weren't aware of this, Congress has now told Planned Parenthood, and Dr. Deborah Nakatella in particular, that they want her to appear at a hearing about this. And so the letter was signed by Republican members of the Energy and Commerce Committee, the chairman, Fred Upton of Michigan, the Oversight and Investigation Subcommittee Chair, Tim Murphy, also signing Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee, David McKinley of West Virginia, Joe Barton of Texas, Joe Pitts of Pennsylvania, Michael Burgess of Texas, Morgan Griffith of Virginia, Larry Bouchon of Indiana, Bill Flores, Texas, Susan Brooks, Indiana, Mark Wayne Mullen of Oklahoma, Richard Hudson, North Carolina, Chris Collins of New York, and Kevin Kramer, North Dakota. And there are five states that have asked for an investigation of Planned Parenthood as well. And why? Because, again, this is an organization that is receiving taxpayer dollars. And they owe an explanation to Congress if Congress says, we want to take a look at your books, we want to take a look at your operations, we want to see what it is that you're doing, and indeed, if you can back it up, that what you're saying is that everything you do is legal and ethical. Those hearings, I don't have a date in front of me. I'll have to search that as we go along here. But tell me what you think of this. Tell me what your reaction has been to this story. Couldn't avoid it on my news feed on social media. And if it showed up on yours and you were dismayed, tell me, now that the news has been out there for several days, your thoughts. 800-811-3003 is our number. It's a toll-free call, and would love to hear from you. The ground rules always state here on Cradle My Heart Radio, you do not need to give your name, but we can would love to hear your thoughts at 800-811-3003. And now let's listen to Father Frank Pavone with his words about the healing that does exist for those of us who've been harmed by abortion more personally than just beyond these practices that have now been brought to light by Planned Parenthood.
They can help us exactly by awakening us to the need for healing. When we feel the pain of these kind of things we are discussing, that precisely is the first step to healing, because when we are unhealed, and we're all impacted by abortion, first and foremost, as in your case, those who have actually had the procedure, but then it impacts the dads, it impacts the siblings, the grandparents, the friends, the abortionists, and we who are the pro-life advocates. It impacts us all, and the healing starts when we feel that pain, because if we don't feel that pain, a person who is unhealed is also disconnected, and you see the most extreme example of that when you do see, like we were discussing before, these people who are actually doing the abortions talking about it as if they're discussing the lunch menu. So by having the pain, by having the tears, we have started on the road to healing. And then the good news is that the healing is available. programs and retreat programs like Rachel's Vineyard, individual counseling, the power of God's Word and of the sacraments, the compassion of the people who are there. Everywhere, in every community, they are there to reach out a loving hand of compassion, a listening ear, and to help people do what has to be done, which is to grieve. We have to enter in to the process of grieving, giving these children to the Lord, giving ourselves to the Lord, and admitting what we've done, and putting everything into his hands for us to receive forgiveness and peace. So Healing the Shockwaves of Abortion talks about all this multiple damage to multiple groups of people, and most importantly, leads people to that healing.
That's Father Frank Pavone, the National Director of Priests for Life and also the Pastoral Director of the Silent No More Awareness Campaign. And you can go to their website to learn more about this outreach that they have just started called Healing the Shockwaves of Abortion. It's a far-reaching initiative because the ripples from abortion are far-reaching, not only in our cultures, but in our hearts. 800-811-3003 is our number. Time for a short break and then back with your phone calls. Do join us tonight here on Cradle My Heart Radio.
A safe place to connect with others. Finding God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll-free at 800-811-3003. Seeking to help others. Find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll-free at 800-811-3003.
800-811-3003. Our phones are open for you live tonight on this 19th of July, and so glad that you are listening. We really appreciate you being with us. Next week, I believe we're going to be bringing you a conversation with my instructor this week at our Applied Bioethics Certificate coursework here at Oklahoma Wesleyan University, where I'm broadcasting live tonight. Scott Klusendorf is the author of The Case for Life, and he has been pouring into us with a really intense week of study. My classmates and I have been reading from the literature on both sides of the abortion debate about the ethics of abortion. And so we've been reading some of the leading pro-choice voices. We've been reading philosophers, ethicists, theologians. And then we came together for this week of discussion and study and testing and writing. And it's been an amazing journey. But what it comes down to is this, as Professor Klusendorf taught us, it is wrong to intentionally kill an innocent human being. And elective abortion intentionally kills an innocent human being. Therefore, abortion is wrong. Now, you may say, well, why did you need to read all of the theologians and philosophers and deep thinkers to come to such a, compact answer? And the thing is, because, of course, we're arguing about the humanity of the fetus. What is the nature of the unborn? And we can learn everything we need to know about that scientifically from embryology textbooks. They will all tell you that from conception, from the minute it becomes a new organism, it is a new human being when egg and sperm unite to form the zygote. A new human being. That is not in dispute in the science of embryology. But what is, of course, at question is, well, when does that new being, that new organism, take on human value? It's been very hard to avoid a conclusion that, although some would like to think that it's when the being somehow acquires some sort of human functioning or level or development, that then we can say it's a human being, when there's a possibility of rationality, etc., going back to philosophers like Immanuel Kant, who said you had to be able to reason in order to be a moral being. But all of these designations seem to me to be arbitrary when we think about the nature that each one of us is endowed with. And for those of us who see the humanity of the unborn, for those of us who see it, I hope that we can maintain the clarity of that vision as we go forth and have conversations with our friends, with our family, and our churches, because people in churches aren't completely convinced. They're not completely satisfied with the answers that are being given at church, even if it's even being discussed at your church. Believe me, you're so far ahead of the game if it is being discussed at your church. So A Case for Life is a book that you can pick up on Amazon. You can probably get it on your Kindle tonight before you even head to bed. And I would say, if you want to know how to defend the pro-life worldview, or if you have questions that, you know, trouble you deep in your heart and you want to believe it, you're just not certain of the evidence, I hope you'll get A Case for Life. And tune in then next week when we talk with Scott Klusendorf about how he arrived at his conclusions and what has drawn him into this work to be a pro-life apologist. You know, he says that because of stories like this Planned Parenthood story, we all should be prepared to give a reason for the hope that we have, that God has a very different view of humanity than what we've seen in Planned Parenthood this week. Whether or not, again, it remains legal, and whether or not they claim that what they are doing is ethical. You and I need to be prepared to give an answer as to how God's people see this and how we feel about it. And so if you need some equipping, Scott Klusendorf is your man. And as we go forward, I hope that I'll be better equipped to articulate the pro-life worldview as well as a result of this training that I'm receiving. 1-800-811-3003 is our number, 1-800-811-3003. And, you know, sometimes it's, I know, tough to get to the phone with a question. You can always send us an email. The best way probably to do that is to just go to cradlemyheart.org, and you can use the contact form there. It's easier than trying to get you a pencil and spell my name, et cetera, et cetera. So just go to cradlemyheart.org. You can leave us an email there. And if you want it to remain confidential, please do let me know that. I want to share an email that we received this week because I think that it illustrates an important thing that I want you to think about and to tuck into your heart. A listener sent me a note saying that she'd been married for almost 10 years with two beautiful children, but before the marriage, she terminated two pregnancies, and she felt that she had made the decision for the couple and for the sake of the impending marriage, but now she realizes that her husband did not agree and that he resents her and seems to be struggling now all these 10 years later as a father and as a husband. She says she doesn't think he dealt with the termination of those two children that they could have had, and she doesn't know how to help him see that this might be driving some of the problems that he's having in his parenting and in the marriage right now. So she wants to know how to proceed on that knowledge. And you know, ladies, when we sense that we've got an accurate diagnosis about just what's wrong with our men, I would say that is when we need to be most careful. So that's why I really appreciated her getting in touch with me rather than trying to just figure this out or sit him down and lecture him about how the abortion in their past is affecting him. And basically how I would respond if you find yourself in a situation like this is, first of all, of course, my disclaimer that I am not a counselor. I offer my response as a friend in faith and from the perspective of what the Word of God says. And if you are experiencing troubling times in your marriage, professional counseling may be beneficial, especially if there is abuse or the possibility of divorce. But having said that, I think the hardest thing for our husbands to do is to admit their emotional vulnerability to us, their wives. You know, so many of us remain blinded to our own emotions after abortion, men and women, that it just causes resentment if someone brings up some aspect of it that reminds us of the parts that we are aware of, men and women. And so you may be right about your husband having shut down his emotions. But you know what? Even if we've got it right, ladies, so what? In other words, unless your husband chooses to share his feelings with you, the most that you can do is validate with him what you think may be going on, but he may dismiss that, and then you're right back where you started. And I know that what has helped us, my husband Bruce and me, has been, you know, for us to get very specific about exactly what I think the troubling things are for me, not to be telling him what I think is going on in his heart, but for me. And after I was able to fully do that, God called us both into a time of prayer and fasting, and our marriage has been radically better since. It's not magic. It's not a cure-all. It's not a formula. I'm simply telling you something that we experienced. And yes, we literally got on our knees together beside our bed as we prayed aloud, something that we don't necessarily always do with one another, although we pray together every day. We've had many, many breakthroughs as a result of those prayers. So that is where I would tell you perhaps you should start. A very short amount of time left, but let's see if we can get a quick comment in from Ruth, who's taken the time to call us tonight. Ruth, hi, and welcome to Cradle My Heart Radio.
Hi. You know, I just was listening to your program, and I had to call in. Planned Parenthood has been dealing the way that they have been dealing with young women has been going on for many, many years, and I can say this from my own experience. In 1974, a Planned Parenthood doctor advised me to abort the baby I was carrying and told me that I would never be successful and I would never have get a college degree and my child would suffer and basically that it would be the end of my life if I didn't have an abortion.
Oh, about 30 seconds. What happened? Did you do it?
No, I did not. And I do have a college degree, and I met my son about 6 years ago, and he is a lawyer, and we are fine. Praise God. But just so people know, this is how they operate.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from Cradle My Heart. For more information about this show, you can visit our Cradle My Heart program page on MyFaithRadio.com.